Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have three martinis today. We're not exactly sure how to define them. The first one's definitely bad. The second one is partly crazy, maybe partly good. The third one is hopefully good. And then there's actually a fourth one that we'll talk about a little bit later as well. All of them related to the big news from Tuesday, which is, of course, spilling into today. Here is the NBC News version of the story that broke yesterday and subsequently consumed pretty much the rest of the news cycle on Tuesday. U.S. intelligence agencies have made an assessment that North Korea has constructed a nuclear weapon small enough to fit on a missile, according to a U.S. official briefed on the assessment. The U.S. belief that North Korea has reached this milestone was first reported by The Washington Post, which said that the assessment came from a Defense Intelligence Agency analysis completed last month. The official said, however, that this does not mean that North Korea has fielded a nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missile. The North Koreans still have to establish that they can deliver a weapon accurately that survives reentry. North Korea fired an intercontinental ballistic missile in late July in a test that the regime said showed that U.S. cities are now within its range. And so we're going to talk about a lot of different dimensions in subsequent martinis here, Jim, about what the president had to say and the analysis of that and so forth. But this is clearly an upgrade from where we thought North Korea was. We knew their missile technology was getting better. We did not think they had this capability. And it turns out from subsequent reports that they not only have one, they've got a few dozen of these things. And so this has absolutely ratcheted up the threat. It comes on the heels of the UN sanctions that we thought were good news a couple of days ago, and they probably still are. But what does this ring to you in terms of how much this makes the threat more urgent?
Yeah, I mean, to summarize all of this, everything is bad and crazy unless you really enjoy saying, see, I told you so. And then there's some good martini in it. Although that's kind of the only silver lining we can find there. But it's a pretty grim one. Yeah, it feels like every couple of months there has been some sort of dramatic announcement about North Korea's missile program and their nuclear program. And they're all pointed in the same direction, which is North Korea really wants the ability to put a nuclear weapon on an intercontinental ballistic missile and shoot at the United States. A couple of days ago, they specifically said they have no interest in using it against South Korea and Japan. They just want to hit us. And that's, you know, look, there's a lot of bluster that comes out of Pyongyang, but that seems a pretty clear description of intent. Now, pretty much since the news came out yesterday afternoon, and you pretty much, you know, Twitter's had the equivalent of air raid sirens going around. Apparently one of the cable networks today, not quite how to dig a bomb shelter in your backyard segment. I mean, we got to, you know, Cuban Missile Crisis 1962 really fast in the media environment. And maybe it's not quite justified to reach that point yet. But it's pretty clear that North Korea wants this capability, and that they're pretty far down the road to getting that ability, and the ability to stop them from getting that ability on our side is there's a diminishing window. Time is not on our side. This is not really a full-throated endorsement of a preemptive military strike on North Korea. Every military expert says, look, this is going to be really tough. We can't guarantee we would hit every single underground bunker. North Korea would undoubtedly retaliate, and they pretty much can wipe Seoul off the map. We have a lot of troops in South Korea. It would basically be a second Korean War, and it would get very bloody and very ugly very fast. So if you don't like nuclear war and you don't like conventional war, the third option is learning to live with a nuclear North Korea. And the more this morning goes by, Greg, the more I think you're going to start seeing this as the, if not preferred option, the default position. We will not want to suffer the consequences of war, so we will learn to live with a regime that has nuclear weapons basically pointed at the United States and have the equivalent of negotiations with a gun pointed to our head, because they will probably make demands. We may or may not rebuff them, but they will always have that as a trump card, so to speak, no pun intended. They will always have that as their ace in the hole, and it's kind of baffling to see people insisting it's time to open up diplomatic negotiations. This is exactly what happened before, to foreshadow one of our other martinis. It's not really clear what possibly we could give the North Koreans that they would want more than this, which pretty much ensures the continuance of the regime for, you know, the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's very difficult on a number of levels, and let's dig into it a little bit more, because as you mentioned, Kim Jong-un has made it very clear in some of his statements that right now he's not focused on South Korea or Japan. He's focused on a capability of hitting the United States, and not just the West Coast, but well into the United States, and it appears, sadly, that the technology is getting closer to allowing him to achieve that if we're not able to knock it down, if he ever gets to the point of launching one. So we have that threat from him. That was followed on Tuesday by this response from President Trump at his Bedminster golf course, where he's spending the next few weeks.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before. Thank you.
Thank you. The thank you makes it so much more palatable. Jim, when we see a president responding to an escalation like this, we're not used to seeing the, you know, wait till you see what happens when Hulkamania runs wild on you type response from the White House. It's usually more of a, well, we're going to marshal the international community and we're going to make sure that North Korea knows that this is unacceptable behavior. But Rex Tillerson, flying back from Asia, said that basically Trump is speaking Kim Jong-un's language here.
What the president's doing is sending a strong message to North Korea in language that Kim Jong-un would understand, because he doesn't seem to understand diplomatic language. I think the president just wanted to be clear to the North Korean regime that the U.S., you know, unquestionable ability to defend itself, will defend itself and its allies. And I think it was important that he deliver that message to avoid any miscalculation on their part.
So kind of a double-barreled crazy here. A lot of people thought that Trump was only poking the bear with those comments, as if somehow Kim Jong-un would be less threatening or less crazy if he didn't say those things. And then, of course, there's the reaction to pretty much anything Trump says. But when it refers to our nuclear arsenal, of course, as we mentioned on Twitter, it goes way up to DEFCON 5. So what do you make of the war of words, which I guess the latest now is that Kim Jong-un is threatening to nuke Guam for some reason?
Yeah, this is one of the few times I actually feel relatively confident that this they're not going to follow on with this threat. Not that I don't care about Guam, for all of our listeners out in Guam. And also when we point out how much more serious the North Korean threat is getting as it can reach deeper into the United States, we should not say, you know, we're willing to lose Alaska, Hawaii, or the West Coast. No matter how much San Francisco might drive us crazy, we don't want to see San Francisco nuked. The Trump statement, I don't mind the Secretary of State and the President playing good cop, bad cop. I'm not by itself thinking this is a troubling development. I you know, don't really find you know, bellicose rhetoric in the direction of North Korea to be likely to be the provocation that sets off North Korea, because North Korea is crazy to begin with. This is, you know, the comparison. I was like, oh, you know, don't use heated political rhetoric because it could set off a crazy person. Well, we don't know if it sets off a crazy person because they're crazy, right? The idea that North Korea is going to be really upset by a Trump tweet or Trump statement, and that'll be the thing that launches the second Korean War, I'm very skeptical of that, that that's going to be the trigger. The other interesting thing is worth noting. I'm amazed how easily people forget this. It was just a few years ago that one of North Koreans' way of saber rattling, one of their provocations was to sink a South Korean Navy boat. Another time they fired artillery shells onto a South Korean island. It was just a couple of months ago that they killed Kim Jong-un's brother at an airport in South Asia with sarin, I believe. North Korea's standards of behavior, things that strike them as not that provocative, are in fact in Western eyes exceptionally provocative. And I think that's what worries me the most, is the idea that they might think they're doing something that isn't that bad, that is just kind of gently poking us, but in, by our standards, it's exceptionally, you know, provocative. Imagine if instead of being a you know, somewhere in Asia, that North Korea had committed that attempt, that assassination of the president's brother at LAX or LaGuardia or Dulles or something like that. You're using sarin in crowded airports. These guys are crazy in their risk assessment. So the idea that Trump is the problem here. Look, if Trump was the most even-keeled, easygoing guy in the world, you still have the problem of North Korea miniaturizing its nukes. of having ever more impressive and further ranged intercontinental ballistic missiles, and having an extraordinarily secretive program where it's very hard to learn anything about their true motivations, true goals, red lines, and things like that. And they're also crazy, right? I mean, Trump, when he goes off on fire and fury, yes, it sounds like he just watched Game of Thrones and he's really impressed with the dragons and he wants to talk about that or something like that. But all in all, I'm not really that bothered by what he's saying, other than the sense that he said, well, if they threaten us again, they'll see fire and fury. Well, threatening people is kind of what North Korea does. I don't know if you want to make that your red line, because they will cross that very easily. And then you're in a situation of, okay, how do you want to respond to that? I assume we don't want to respond militarily just to threats. I assume we're going to be in this endless, hopefully this endless cycle of threats that never quite advance. But as I said, with North Korea's history, there's always that chance that their idea of a mild threat is to, you know, sink a ship or something.
All right, let's move on to a brief good martini, because it's a fairly brief statement. Rex Tillerson, as we mentioned, flying back from Asia to the United States, and he was asked, given all the developments that were reported on Tuesday, as well as some of the rhetoric, what should the American people be thinking? And here's what he said.
Do you have any advice for Americans? Should they be worried?
I think Americans should sleep well at night, have no concerns about this particular rhetoric of the last few days. I think the president, again, as commander-in-chief, I think he felt it necessary to issue a very strong statement directly to North Korea. But I think what the president was just reaffirming is the United States has the capability to fully defend itself from any attack and defend our allies, and we will do so. And so the American people should sleep well at night.
So there you go. Rex says, hit the pillow. Don't worry about it. This is just the way of making sure North Korea knows that we're ready to defend ourselves and our allies no matter what it takes. So smart on his part, I assume, Jim.
Rex, when I want to sleep well, I think of Simply Safe. I don't think of North Korea. Little bonus for our fine, fine sponsor there. You know, Greg, what I'm struck by is the tone he's taking. Don't worry. We will be able to handle this. Is very similar to the approach that was taken by the past three administrations. All three of, you know, the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, three very different philosophies towards foreign policy and national security. All basically said, North Korea must not get a nuclear weapon. And yet they did. North Korea must not get the ability to threaten the United States. And yet they do. You can look back to a variety of times where you might think, what if we had taken a different path or something like that? But I think the one, and I wrote about this extensively in the Morning Joel, where this really got started, up until 1993 or so, there was a international inspectors of North Korea's nuclear development program. They kick out the inspectors. And in 1994, they really start getting bellicose. They really start talking about, we will turn Seoul into a sea of fire. And in 1994, the Clinton administration under Bill Clinton is really on the verge of sending a lot more troops to South Korea and really contemplating whether they need to take preemptive strikes at North Korea's nuclear program. Now, it's worth noting, at that time, North Korea, we knew for certain they didn't have the bomb. Could there be a conventional war on the Korean Peninsula, and could that kill a lot of people? Yes, that would be a very bad outcome. But it would be the one way of guaranteeing that you would not be dealing with the situation we have today, i.e. a nuclear-armed North Korea. Jimmy Carter, who was not on behalf of the Clinton administration, basically freelances and goes over there and says, oh, by the way, hey, good news, the North Korea is ready to make a deal. And they do make a deal. And we give them two reactors of light water, basically accumulates out to $5 billion in aid. We build a new electric grid. We give them a ton. And in exchange, they promise they're not going to develop nuclear weapons. Now, during this time period, what I wrote about today, which is really aggravating, is that there's considerable evidence mounting that they were cheating all along. Particularly in 1998, Pakistan sets off their nuclear weapon. There's a wonderful quote from a Western diplomat who says, North Korea was strangely elated about Pakistan's successful detonation of a nuclear weapon. Why would North Korea be so excited about that? Why would they be doing cartwheels and so happy? Because A.Q. Khan, the father of the Pakistan nuclear program, was visiting North Korea and effectively gave them the blueprint. Nuclear physicists and technicians and people, engineers, can tell you the specifics of it, but basically Pakistan gave them a lot of help. So by 2002, the evidence that North Korea is cheating is mounting up, and by that point, it's George W. Bush. By the way, we've just had 9/11. We're at war in Afghanistan, and during that time period, we were preparing for war with Iraq. Bush administration's Assistant Secretary of State goes to North Korea and lays out the evidence and says, we know you're building nuclear weapons. And the response is from the North Koreans is, we will meet swords with swords. In other words, you suckers. I will clean up the language from Animal House. You messed up. You trusted us. And we've been in a situation where the possibility of them having a nuclear response to any effort we made has been, you know, lurking in the background ever since. Now, do we know how reliable the North Korean nukes are? No. They've had a variety of tests that have not worked out quite the way they've wanted. Some of their missile tests haven't worked out the way they've wanted. We have developed programs designed to try to shoot down their missiles before they can reach their targets. Will that work? Each one of these is a, you know, you can kind of calculate in your mind. Think of it as a formula. The likelihood that their missiles launch correctly, the likelihood that their missiles don't get shot down by our countermeasures, the likelihood that their nukes go off. The good news is North Korea could launch something and it might not successfully, you know, nuclear detonate on its target. But man, that's an awful risk to take. The question is, you know, it was kind of fascinating. We all remember that the professor on BBC who had his children barge into the room and give us all a chuckle a couple of months ago. He's in South Korea, and he wrote this very interesting pointing out that North Korea is not an existential threat. And a couple of people are giving him grief about that. And I'd say, look, never give a working dad too much grief when he's got kids barging into his home office. Some of us have been there. And his point is that North Korea can't destroy the United States. But I don't think he really gives short shrift to, but I think the headline certainly does, is that a world in which the United States has lost a city because of a North Korean nuclear weapon would be a drastically different one. Not just for, you know, I think that particular city and the horrific loss of life and radiation and all that other stuff. That's, you know, he's coming up with the comparison of the U.S. Civil War. I mean, it's just trying hard to imagine how that would probably change American culture and character and how Americans see the world. So, and it is, you know, the chances of that happening are greater than zero. Now, we lived through this threat through the entirety of the Cold War, but, you know, the failure to deter the North Korean nuclear program may stand as the worst mistake of the Clinton administration, Bush administration, and Obama administration. But don't worry, Greg, I'm sure the Iran nuclear deal will be totally different.
I'm sure. And, you know, the people in those administrations tried. They made the mistake of trusting. But now when you see Bill Richardson and Ambassador Christopher Hill coming on and tisking the Trump administration for how they're doing it the wrong way, well, you know, you guys didn't exactly succeed either. So while you might have a disagreement and you might understand them a little bit better than some of the folks working on it now, your results are not good.
Yeah, I don't want to hear anybody. Apparently somebody was quoting Madeleine Albright yesterday. Madeleine Albright, who has that infamous photo of her clinking glasses with Kim Jong-il, and who, by my favorite statement, I put this in the Morning Jolt, it struck me as the ultimate example of blind denial of the threat that existed. In 2000, Madeleine Albright made very clear she did not want to see North Korea referred to as a rogue state. It was a state of concern, Greg. It's like the Google HR department is running our foreign policy back in 2000. So, of course, during all this, the U.S. was accumulating evidence that they were building nuclear weapons. So in order to preserve the narrative that everything was fine, the Chip Diller, all is well, messaging. Basically, the Clinton administration was willing to be in kind of a blind denial of the kind of threat that was building in North Korea. That is the worst kind of failure of the American people. But hey, at least the Clinton administration was focused on Al-Qaeda.
Well, you know what the solution is here. It's just a matter of time. Special Envoy Rodman will have to be sent in to de-escalate the situation.
We're joking, Greg, but like maybe he can do this, right? It would be the greatest evidence if nuclear war was deterred by Dennis Rodman. Man, you thought the platypus was evidence that God had a sense of humor, you know?
Oh, man, it's going to be great when President The Rock gives the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Dennis Rodman for averting nuclear war.
Oh, Entertainment Tonight and Capital Gang have blurred. Indistinguishable now.
Hey, we're talking about potential nuclear annihilation and we're ending the show laughing. So I consider that a win. Jim, have a good day.
If this was a video one, we'd close with Slim Pickens riding the bomb. Yeehaw!
Oh, Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.